This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconix. Uconix provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconix. Visit them today at uconix.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're listening to the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter. And as a reminder, the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Holdings. We are out in Los Angeles this whole week. We try to do this usually at least once a season. So I'm incredibly excited about our next guest. It's like food and entertainment when we're out here, and I'm getting hungry. It's getting closer and closer to lunch for me. So we're excited to have with us Chad Bailey. Chad is the Chief Marketing Officer over at Pieology Pizzeria. He is also an accomplished senior marketing executive with a history of success in launching strategies, products, and regional national brand programs. Chad, how did I do?
Good, good.
That wasn't too bad. Now, was it?
How much do I owe you?
Only a couple slices of pizza, my friend. That's all it ever takes with us. Did you bring any product with you?
I did not. I did.
For the love of God, Chad. Listen, next time, bring the little portable pizza. You know, I'm sure you guys have one of those out there. Let's feed the iHeart crew, for crying out loud. They do all of this work for me. I don't know that they ever fully realize that I don't work for them, and yet they do work with us. And so if everybody could please make sure that Bob Pittman is not aware of that, I would greatly appreciate it. So, Chad, where did you grow up? Did you grow up here on the West? On the West Coast?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I'm grew up in Huntington Beach, so nicknamed Surf City.
So I know we were just talking about that a tiny bit before the show started. I wasn't sure if that's where you lived for quite a while or if that's where you grew up. So you're a West Coaster through and through.
I wouldn't probably go all the way to through and through. I was born and raised out here.
Okay, and then you
high
left
school,
for a little
everything
while?
Else. Yeah, I actually went to college back in Greenville, South Carolina. At Furman University.
Okay.
You know, I took a wrong turn, drove for 4 days, and somehow
landed.
That's
where you ended up.
Yeah, landed in Greenville. But absolutely gorgeous campus, like one of the most beautiful campuses in the country. You know, you have the whole lake, you have a bell tower, you have swans. It's a great environment for cultivating.
What took you there? Like, you're at Huntington, which is beautiful. I mean, not that everywhere isn't beautiful, and obviously just your description of where you went to college sounds like it was an absolutely stunning place. But what was it that took you all the way out there? You just wanted something different?
Absolutely. I think I really wanted a challenge. You know, I had been very fortunate in my early years to feel like I accomplished a fair amount of things and was looking to really own who I was as a person, you know, to really step into who I was. And I figured
I'm still working on that. You feel like you accomplished that at your young age?
You know, I think it's always a work in progress. We're all a work in progress.
Well, I need a lot of work. There's a lot of progress that needs to be made over here on this side. So you felt like you had accomplished a lot already at a pretty young age.
Yeah, and I wanted to really, you know, go out there and challenge myself. And I figured there's no better way to do that than to really kind of tear down all I had. I had no one that I knew. I had no family support, no friend support, no one at that school. So I really had to build it all back up from nothing.
Were you legally required to leave the country or the city to some extent? I don't know. I mean, you never know. You might as well at least ask. So
yeah, my mom did tell me so.
Your mom? Fair enough.
I'm guessing that wasn't.
What'd you major in when you were out there? Did you major in marketing?
It was a liberal arts school. So the closest you could get to that was communications. So I kind of had an emphasis, which is a fancy term for kind of a minor in most schools,
sure,
in marketing. So I took a lot of marketing classes and that type of stuff.
And so to some extent, you knew that that was at least a field you wanted to be in, or at least immerse yourself in. Had you done anything in the marketing? I know you just said you felt like you had accomplished a lot when you were in Huntington. What do you feel like you had accomplished?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I was actually in AP art. I actually took 4 years of art in high school, which is kind of rare. I actually lettered in art, believe it or not. I lettered in cross country and track and field too. But art was so subjective that, you know, it's not this like, hey, in cross country, you had to hit a certain mile time or you had to be this man on the team. But art, you literally had to get 4 consecutive terms of A's. And they would change mediums. So you'd be like, oh, I'm really good at pastels. And then next you have clay. You're like, what the heck does clay and pastels have to do with one another? You know? So, but I was actually National Art and Honor Society president. I was student body senior fine arts commissioner. But what I realized in that process was I really didn't want to actually do the act of creating art for necessarily a living, because I think that took a bit for me personally, a little of the joy out of it. But I knew I wanted to take that keen sense of art and what's good communication and what's visually compelling and somehow apply it to business. So I knew that, hey, I was always looking for how do I tie kind of my strengths into that next level. But I, at the time, I don't even know that I knew what marketing was until I got to college. Like, it wasn't a term even still at that time. You know, there wasn't really this, you could be CMO one day. It's like that didn't really exist as I remember it.
What did your dad do growing up?
So my dad was actually in the aerospace industry, was very fortunate to retire at a young age. You know, he also did some great investing in the stock market and that type of stuff. So I think I learned from him more so kind of the EQ side, the emotional intelligence around self-awareness, ability to spot leaders, really deeply understand how people are working. And so he helped layer in kind of that business insight.
Brothers and sisters at all?
So I pretty much grew up as only child. I have a half brother. He's 16 years my senior. So okay. We didn't really grow up in the same house.
Yep.
Awesome guy, but I pretty much grew up as only child. So yeah.
And so when you told your parents that you were going to go to college kind of over on the exact opposite side of the country, what did they say about that?
You know, I think they were very encouraging, of course. You know, mom wanted me to come
be down
back
the street,
and be down the street. But I think they've always been very supportive and encouraged me to pursue my dreams and to grow as a person and to become the best version of myself that I possibly can.
And obviously you did eventually come back, because now you're here. You're on the West Coast. Did you have any stops between that time and your time kind of in jumping into actually working in the space?
So I had more internships in college than anyone else had at that point. I was like on the admissions video. I had three different agency internships. I started on the agency side, and I left two job opportunities on the table in Greenville, South Carolina to come back to SoCal just because I loved it so much, and came back to no job. So I don't know that was the wisest decision, but it gave me an opportunity again to come back out here to interview at a couple different agencies, to do some informational interviews, that type of stuff. So it was pretty much a direct route. I kind of went there and I came back and started my career here in Southern California back in the agency business.
Well, it also sounds like, again, if you're getting opportunities like that straight out of college, you probably at least felt comfortable that coming back here, you'd find certainly something. And it sounds like you jumped into, you said, the agency space first. And so talk about that. Who did you work for and what was your job in the agency?
Sure. So I worked for a small Orange County agency called Heil Bryce. We were actually top five in Orange County at that time.
Creative or media or a mix?
Everything. So this is back in the time that I think integrated marketing communications, you know, IMC was a big thing. Like literally you could handle soup to nuts for an account. So I was actually put on as an account executive to start the Piccadilly Cafeteria's account, which Piccadilly was about 140-ish corporate store chain based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And so I was put on that, and we did everything. So we did television. We had an in-house recording studio. We had an in-house Avid video editing suite. We did outdoor billboards. We did signage. We did everything, even digital to what it was at that stage.
Yeah.
And it was a very dynamic environment. You know, I think we had like around $9, $10 million of billings just for that account, you know. And so there's a ton of exposure to everything. And it was myself, and then I had a true account director who was about 10 years or more into the business, you know, a very seasoned individual. And about around 3 or 4 months into it, he left to take another opportunity. And so at that point, I was running around already 80% of the account, because this wasn't my first time in the agency, right? I had three other internships. I'd done some other gigs in between there.
I understood how it worked.
And so I was constantly pushing myself. So I was handling probably about 80% of the account. And after the gentleman left, the account director, I went to the president and I was like, look, you have nothing to lose. Give me, you know, 30, 60, 90 days to prove myself that I can handle this account at the same level, if not better, than it was handled before. And if I can, then give me the position, give me the title, allow me to be account director. And so after that time period, not only did I exceed in it, I actually gained more billings, you know, expand the account, expand the breadth, was able to move it that much further forward that then I was involved in, you know, pitching new business. I was involved with a grocery store chain, PNC Bilo Markets out of Northeast. I helped win the Marie Callender's business, another restaurant chain. So I now had this whole kind of portfolio of doing everything.
Clearly an underachiever.
Yeah.
You push yourself, but that's sometimes what you have to do in this space. You know, we, as you probably know, you know, this show is really targeted towards CMOs and VPs, whether that's on a local level or a global level, professionals who've been doing this for some length of time. And you find out there that there's some people that continue to try to figure out a way to evolve themselves and what's happening out in the space. There's other times where you just kind of throw your hands up a little bit and you're just so frustrated by all the change that's happening that you just need, you need a lifeline to some extent. You need somebody to remind you of why you got into this business. And so from that perspective, I think the beauty of that story for me is just a reminder that sometimes you got to make sure that you're being as aggressive with yourself as anybody else, because there's nobody who's just going to call you into the office and say, oh, by the way, we want to make sure that you get this promotion. And if you have been doing this for a while and you are not always thinking about that, there's probably a couple people a couple rungs down the ladder from you that are out there hustling. You know, we run into that all of the time. You know, there's a couple of people on LinkedIn that I follow a lot, and they're these young guys, and they're just out there. They're out there to work, you know, and they're out there to take whatever business it is that they can take and really build up their resume and their portfolio. And it's great to see, because you know that there's still that youth out there that's doing that. It's also a little scary to some extent. So, yeah. How long did you stayed in the agency space then, for maybe another 3 or 4 years, and then you jumped out? And is that when you landed over at Johnny Rockets?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I've always appreciated is looking at the whole picture. And I think what I found in the agency realm was I only ever felt like I got to see one side of the coin. You know, so what do I mean by that? Well, I got to get briefed in on the project. I got to come up with ideas. I got to build the whole marketing communication strategy and plan, which was great, but I didn't understand the business. So why that product? What's the food cost associated with it? How does it impact operations? How do you train that product? How's that product rung up in your point of sale system, right? How is it analyzed? All that type of stuff. All that I never knew. And I always constantly felt like I was missing something. Like I'm not understanding really the basis of this business case.
And so by having that, or getting a chance to immerse yourself in that, that almost is the crux of being able, you can't maybe necessarily do all of the work you want to do if you don't have the knowledge of the base part of the business itself.
Correct. And that's what that's what really attracted me, I guess, to going to the restaurant side, going from client service to becoming a client, was you very much so in restaurant marketing have to be grounded in the business case. You know, if you don't have a business case, if you don't understand operational complexity and profitable sales and food cost and all those types of components, you're never going to be able to sell in a program, especially in a franchise system, which is a lot what I've worked in. You know, you have a lot of folks that have invested their money into the success, and they're not just going to do something because you say you need to do something. It's not a command and control. It's a influence, you know, which I think is a real definition of leadership is all around influence. It doesn't matter if you're a janitor, it doesn't matter your title, it doesn't matter your position. If you treat people the right way, if you listen to them intently, if you show that you can add value both ways, that influence allows you to help in decision making. And that's what we try and build in working in a restaurant franchise environment.
And that's certainly a level of management to some extent, by figuring out we're not all wired exactly the same. What motivates somebody is a little bit different from the person who sits next to them, who sits next to them.
Yeah.
Certainly in the franchise space, it's even more interesting, because you do have people who've invested, in some cases, their life savings, or certainly a substantial amount, and they're going to have an opinion, you know, around it. And they're not always wrong. You know, we work with a lot of franchisees, and some of them are people that you struggle to try to help them understand something from a global scope. And many of them are market leaders, and they've got great insights. So I won't make you spend too much time on Johnny Rockets, but were they a client of yours at the time, or how did you end up there?
No, so I was recruited there. There was this recruiter who was constantly kind of calling me, and they were like, oh, I have this great opportunity in New York. And I'm like, don't really want to relocate to New York. And, oh, I have this great opportunity in LA. And I'm like, that's a 2-hour drive away every time. And then they finally called a third time. They're like, yeah, we have this opportunity in Lake Forest. Isn't that the city you live in? And I'm like, I'll take a look at it. You know, like it was pretty hard to say no.
We're standing outside your door.
Exactly.
Like, please return our call.
Exactly. So at that point I looked at it, and I really, fell in love with opportunity, really, you know, felt a connection to the SVP of marketing, who's going to be my boss there and that type of stuff. And, you know, it was an adventure at Johnny Rockets. I mean, I was there for 6.5 years. I went through 5 different department heads, 3 different CEOs and a buyout. So needless to say, learning how to be adaptable is a highly valuable skill. You know, I think in any, one of my favorite sayings is smooth seas don't make for strong sailors. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, anyone can captain a ship in a harbor, right? And what sometimes I think we forget is the fact that when you're kind of going through the crap, crap is also manure, which means it's a high growth opportunity. And so in that change and in those transitions, every time you have a chance to kind of level up, you have a chance to look yourself in the mirror and seize on new opportunities and do new things and reprove yourself and reset yourself and constantly challenge and grow. And so if anything in that experience, not only did I learn to appreciate and love the restaurant business, but I also really grew tremendously. I will, you know, went from a manager to being the number two, the director of brand marketing at Johnny Rockets. And so that growth and that experience through all those different leaders helped me to, I think, refine and hone my leadership style and who I was really going to be.
And maybe you wouldn't have had the chance to do that if once your first boss had kind of changed, if you hadn't elevated up into that position, you might have just decided, you know what, I don't want to go through this again, or a second time or a third time. The fact that maybe you managed to stay through it as long as you did with as much change as was there is, again, a testament to how much you probably learned during that change.
Absolutely.
And that's hard. Look, change, this whole crazy industry is all change right now. It's all hard right now. There's nothing easy, I feel like, about any of this right now. But to your point, if you can just muster up the energy and the ability to push your way through it, there's so much to learn. You know, we started our first company, which was an advertising agency, 10 years ago when the economy had just bottomed out. I had been in media sales at the time, and I think I felt like, you know what, I'm not going to make money this year anyway. Why don't I finally do this thing that I thought about doing? And it, a lot of people thought that was crazy, but to me it was opportunity, because to some extent when things are tight or hard, that's when people need the help the most. When the money's just free flowing, it's easy to kind of throw some cash out there and just say, well, yeah, you know, let's just try that. It's when every dollar has to work that, you know, you really sometimes need that help. So you made your way from there. You made a couple of other stops, and then you ended up over at Pyology.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm at Pyology now. Great. You know, I think it's, I always come from a place of authenticity. You know, like I can't be a CMO and a head of marketing and product a lot of times for a company unless I deeply believe in it, you know. And
so you just have a passion for pizza?
I had a passion for the fact that Pyology was the best in the space. You know, I tried all the different other folks that are there. Of course, pizza's nothing new, right? It's not like a new category, you know, and I always loved their product. You know, it was always heads and tails better than everyone else's. And so when you step in and have those type of rich bones to build on, I think that's a really exciting opportunity.
How did you end up there? Another recruiter or...
So my fifth boss at Johnny Rockets, he actually probably gives me way more credit than I deserve, but he was always really gracious when I got my first CMO gig after that. He's always been a great connector. And he was actually an interim CMO at Pyology, hired to do some consulting work to help round out a couple big projects and that type stuff. And because of that role, he was working with the CEO, and he was also kind of tasked with helping to find the permanent replacement. And so he reached out to me and connected us with the CEO, and we really met eye to eye, and I felt like I could learn a lot from Greg and Mo, my boss, the CEO. He's such a dynamic leader, and he has so much other industry experience. So he was in manufacturing, he was at Easton Sports, he was at Airwalk. I mean, you name it, he brings such a rich and dynamicness to his perspective on things that there's a ton that I've learned and continue to learn from kind of his multidimensional, multi-industry way of which he looks at the business.
So think about what you just said, though, the fact that it was your fifth boss, that was that relationship was the one that kind of tipped you into this one. So if you had thrown in the towel the second, you know, person or a third person or a fourth person, it was that connection and that, not only just that connection, but that willingness to just say, okay, well, here's the next person who's in this spot, and let me do the best work that I can, rather than throwing your hands up and just saying, why do I bother anymore? They keep changing out my boss, and I'm doing my work. Think of how valuable that relationship was, and the fact that clearly you've You've always seemed to focus on doing good work, regardless of who's below you or above you. And in doing so, it created that relationship that kind of took you really to some extent where you are today. And it sounds like you've had a chance really to grow with this connection with the CEO. Big company, small company, what's the size of Pyology?
Yeah, we're mid-size. So, you know, we have 140 restaurants today in 21 states. We actually just signed a really big announcement that we actually sent out.
Yeah. How's that?
Yeah.
Pretty good?
Perfect. We actually are going to more than double in size over the next few years. We just signed a big agreement with TZG Partners for China. So we're going to open up a lot of restaurants over there. We continue to grow domestically with a fantastic group of franchise partners here locally, but we're also expanding globally. And China is one of our biggest first announcements.
Is that just that? Do you have any other locations yet overseas or all here currently domestically?
No, so we already have Spain and Mexico. We already are in those countries already, and we'll continue to expand there. But China is our newest newest addition. And of course, just given the size and scope of that country, you know, small little place.
Yeah, little place.
We're very excited about our growth there.
So how will that change your role to some extent as you guys add in now some of these international opportunities? Will that dynamic, or is that one of the exciting pieces for you that you'll be able to kind of expand outside of just a U.S. scope?
Absolutely. You know, I had a large opportunity. I think we were in around like 14, 15 countries when I was at Giant Rocket. So we doubled in size there. So I was part of kind of expanding it globally then as well. But I think in this adventure, it's really around the aspect of how do you create global impact with local relevance. You know, we're just not trying to be, oh, it's the exact same cookie cutter here versus there. You know, we really want to be locally relevant, and not only from a communications marketing strategy, but also from a product side as well. You know, how do we adapt a great product to a local culture in a unique way to bring fast casual pizza, which really doesn't exist that much in that market, to that market in a meaningful and impactful way.
What size is your marketing team?
So I have 7 people on my team. So,
and so at 7 people, obviously you have to sometimes wear multiple hats. I'm assuming your different team members do, and sometimes you have to use outside vendors for different parts or pieces. What are some of those relationships look like? How do you develop those opportunities when you can't do something in house? How do you create that search from that standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we look for is true partners, because at a 7-person team and doing all the things that we do, you know, I oversee marketing, culinary, and in-store design. So when you look at that, we're really looking for people that are extensions truly of our department. And we mean that in all fullness. So, you know, we of course work with a variety of different agencies. You know, we have one that's our primary agency.
You just can't get rid of them sometimes, huh? Agencies, you know, it's still in your life.
It's still in my life.
For better or for worse.
But I also think, in having worked with agencies since I've been on that side, I feel like I understand what it means even more deeply to build a partnership, what they're looking for, how to, you know, it's, I think too many times junk in, junk out, you know, the expectation of the client can be, I want all this amazing thing, but they don't do the heavy lifting on their side. They don't take the ownership of writing a really clear brief of really giving your agency a good perspective coming into it, rather than just saying, hey, come up with some amazing ideas. So I would like to think that in that area that I'm able to create better bridges and more alignment and better synchronicity in that symbiotic relationship to really create it as an extension of my internal team.
And you were just going to say again that you've got a couple of agencies that you work with out there. How do you feel like that collaboration has worked for you guys? Does it work remotely? Does it work better when they're closer, or what do you feel like makes the right mix?
Yeah, you know, I think it.
What's the right ingredient? How was that? Did I work in a little a little pun, a little food pun there to some extent?
Absolutely. I think it depends upon the type of product you have. You know, I think in the pace that things move, and especially we have a very entrepreneurial culture, you know, we literally in a week will change up schedules on things. So when you're looking at that, for our needs at Pyology, having a local agency is really important to us, because we can literally run and gun on the fly. You can do shoots, you can do, you know, collaborations, you can do social, you can do digital, all that type stuff, and you can move it and dynamically change it fast. class. It's not like you're having to ship out all the ingredients or they have to have your spec product, all that type of stuff. You know, it doesn't take that same level of logistics. And I think we are able to leverage that, that simplicity and put complexity into places that we can get the most return for it rather than having things be just that much harder to actually do and to shift and to pivot on.
We talked about global. I want to spend just a few more minutes on that. What's next after China? Have you guys kind of made a determination on that yet? Or the markets will come as the markets come? Or China's big enough. Why really look beyond that quite yet?
Yeah, so we're continuing to look in a lot of different countries internationally. We don't have any that I can talk to today necessarily. Sure. But the spirit of it is we really want to be able, again, to have that global impact with local relevance. So anytime we see a country where we feel like we can find the right partner, because it is, you know, these are master franchise agreements, so you're really talking about normally a larger entity that has operational support, that has operational experience, and that has the capital and the infrastructure to be able to come into a market successfully and then operate that market successfully and at our level of a high quality delivery, you know, you really have to put the heavy lifting on the front end. You know, I always like to say that in franchising, it's actually harder to get out of a franchise relationship than, unfortunately, I don't like this, but unfortunately, sure, out of a marriage. You know, it's like it is a very deep, you know, legal agreement. And so you have to treat it with that amount of discipline and that amount of intention and that amount of sharing to get to that place that you're like, hey, this is truly going to be a very long partnership. This is not a one and done. This is not a, oh, we'll see if it works out, you know. And so the amount of investment that you have to invest from a people perspective, from a time, from energy, you want to make sure that, you know, that you're doing that in a way that's going to be meaningful, impactful, and going to be mutually beneficial for both parties. And so we constantly are looking for those types of folks. We've been fortunate to find some in our existing markets, and we'll continue to work on that.
Listen, I've got one more question for you. That sure. Went fast, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's our time. Wow.
It's lunchtime. I'm still hoping that maybe after this is done, you can page the pizza, you know, the pizza truck, or maybe you've got some coupons in your backpack. You ready for some pizza over there? We're all ready for pizza.
Absolutely.
Listen, it's been Chad Bailey, Chief Marketing Officer for Pieology Pizzeria. Here's my last question for you. Obviously, again, you're somebody who's pushed yourself to the limits to some extent. So what do you feel like you wish you knew more about? What's happening in the space that you feel like, gosh, I just wish I understood this a little more. I wish I had the time or the size of a team to better understand how this thing is working in the marketing space.
Yeah, you know, I think if I could go back, I would love to deeply, even more deeply appreciate and understand all the technical components, because I think technology has advanced so much and it constantly is dynamically changing, you know. But I think I would have probably gone back in college and taken even more computer science classes. You know, I took a few, and I think generally speaking, I'm pretty techie, but I would love to understand it from a ones and zeros perspective, if that makes sense, you know, to truly appreciate some of those components, because so much of what we do in today's day and age in a marketing factor impacts technology. And the better you can understand the root of and the origins and how that all functions, and some of those coding kind of components, et cetera, I feel like the better and the quicker you can make sure that your 30,000-foot ideas actually are executable and impactful at the store level.
Well, look, UCLA is just down the street.
Sign up.
I think they have online classes. I'm not sure. UCLA.com. Well, listen, Chad, thank you for joining us on the show. I promised you that this would be painless. If you want to find out more about Chad, just stalk him on LinkedIn. That's what we do all the time. And look, just go to Google, type in Pieology. If you haven't been to one yet, the food is, I can tell you truthfully, absolutely fantastic. So thank you again for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take us out.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. UConnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to UConnex today for a free demo. UConnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.